Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday, November 14th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here, the word Start Here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app. That app contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It also contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have been stepped through the use of that tool, and in lieu of having your own coach or a support group near you, you can use those as a tutorial on how to get maximum benefits from the use of these tools in minimal time. And we hope that people do all of that soon and often because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives when they do, and because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of that to share with us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581. 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1 on your phone, it will put the little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I will turn on your microphone and announce you by your area code. So, how can we support you? What is on your mind? The last time we talked was Friday, and we finished a review of Lesson 28. So now we have read through and reviewed Lesson 27 and 28, and we have time, as we like to do on Monday, spend a little bit more time before we start into something, giving people an opportunity to raise a hand or raise a question. the work with the Way of Mastery, especially because there will be some holidays coming up, has me wonder if we're going to finish within this year. We might, but we are not not on any kind of a schedule. We may not finish the book within a year, but as we've mentioned, it is the kind of thing where even if we finish it in a 12-month period with reading and commentary, that will essentially be 3 times faster than it was originally presented, because it was presented 1 lesson per month. So there's always plenty of time to go back and review and, as Michael Rice would say, build the brain cells for different, some would say deeper understanding. Some would say completely different understanding of what's being presented and or the tools that can be derived from this work, even when it doesn't say, here's an exercise. My eyes and ears have several times found something that I can use as an exercise. And every little bit helps as we're working toward rewriting the unproductive narrative that we've been conditioned with. And that narrative is based on separation, it's based on competition, it's based on us against them, and it really, that's one of the best things about this book and this work from my perspective, is that it's not saying you have to do this or that. It keeps reminding us that we have choice. And as we exercise that choice, we reap the benefits. And if we push back and we say, no, I don't have a choice, then we reap the benefits. So we're creating an experience of our lives by how we think about and how we define ourselves and our world and our relationship to it. And every little bit we can step into of realizing how we have choice moves us further into the process of clearing up the false perceptions, the false beliefs, which are literally creating the prison for us, as they were talking about in the last session. And it is my fears that it is most important for me to dismantle, because it is every place where fear has made a home in my mind that I do not embrace lovingly, that I do not let's say dismantle. Every place that fear has made a home in my mind that I do not dismantle continues to block my awareness of my true nature and the light of creation, what at one point Yeshua called the shimmering radiance that underlies everything that he was asking to see when he was a boy. And he learned to see the shimmering radiance underlying everything, the energy of creation that is actively expressing through you and through everyone and everything you see every moment. And it's your fears and nothing else that block you from seeing that. This is why we talked about it. The Course in Miracles says, you may wonder why you need to look lovingly, or you need to look into your deepest hatreds. Because if you can't see through their false nature, if when those ideas, those thoughts, those beliefs get activated in your mind, you treat them as true, that is the thing that blocks you from seeing love, light, possibility, creativity, you know, a loving world, a loving environment, lovingly look at yourself and everyone you interact with. It is only those things that you have, those places in your mind where you value your fears, that block you from seeing a loving, joyful world. And you might consider every exercise in this work as the either the direct tool or the building blocks for the tool that will help you dismantle those places in your mind where fear has made a home. And it's that process in various ways over and over again in this work that we're invited to engage. Where might I be hiding a fear? Where might I be living my life in the way that fear would tell me to live rather than in the way love would tell me to live? So, we have time if anybody's interested making a comment or a question. If not, I will begin reading Lesson 29, which is titled, Freedom is Love Under All Conditions. Once again, beloved friends, we join together with you because we remain as committed as you are to discovering ever greater depths, depths of the Creator's presence, depths of our own presence, ever greater depths of what alone is true always, of what alone is unchanged, unchanging, and unchangeable forever. We would speak unto you in this lesson of that which deepens the understanding of abiding in perfect knowing, in perfect knowledge. Now, in the last few lessons, they were trying to help us understand that this is, their definition for this is not the recitation of facts. This is the present moment experience of life without coloration, without interpretation, without labeling, without judgment. The direct experience of life is what they're calling perfect knowledge. The text goes on and says, we want to discuss a theme that you have heard before, though from a slightly different perspective. The theme goes by a term that most of you are familiar with. That term is karma. Karma is popularly considered as a means that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. For everything you put out, a similar energy returns. Now, I have said before that karma can exist only where unconditional loving does not. This means that to the degree that your mind has not been purified of fear, that the mind has not been purified of need, or that the mind has not been purified of its tendency toward idolatry, that is creating something which is a substitute for love and mistaking form for content, wherever this is occurring, you are indeed experiencing the creation of karma. What do we mean by that? Each time you hold an unloving thought, you are going to experience the effect of the fruit of that thought. In reality, there are two levels at which this occurs, or two ways in which it occurs. The first is immediate. The second is mediated through the forms of time. Next section, titled Unloving Thoughts Alter the Chemical Balance of Your Body. Just like Bruce Lipton, cellular biologist, tells us, There are receptor sites on every cell of your body that respond to your mind energy. So even if you are in the most pristine environment, good food, clean water, purified air, plenty of rest in your body, you can still get your body, the actual cells in your body, to go into contraction, to go in shutdown and defense mode, where they don't take in nutrition and they don't repair worn out parts and they don't expel waste. And if they stay there too long, they decay and die. Just because you're holding unloving thoughts, just because you're holding thoughts of judgment and fear and bitterness and hurt and resentment. Here it is, lesson 29, the second section. Unloving thoughts alter the chemical balance of your body. And the text reads, in the first, in that which is immediate, the very moment you think an unloving thought as a physically embodied being, you immediately alter the electrical flow of energy throughout the physical system. You immediately alter the chemical balance of the body, and thereby you experience tightness in the body, sadness perhaps, depression, an overall ill-at-ease feeling. For every negative thought, not just the big ones that you really get your attention wrapped around, but even the small ones, this is still true. Depression can only occur in a mind that has been denying its pathway to joy. Depression, then, is the result of a resistance to the true flow of life throughout the body-mind. This resistance occurs in many ways. It can be the result of not feeling a feeling to its completion. It can be the result of withholding a simple truth. And more often than not, it can be the result of denying the impulse of the heart. As you begin to walk a spiritual path, you realize that you need to be open to the guidance of the Holy Spirit. And that, in fact, you cannot awaken yourself, because if you could, you would have already done so. Then the opportunities are presented that contain within them all that you need to awaken from your illusions. But you resist it because it does not conform to your image of yourself. There are many ways in which you can resist and create a blockage in the flow of energy through the system. It is all around some form of a negative thought. All negativity is an expression of fear. All attempts to control another are really fear. Anger is merely a form of fear. So the very moment in which the mind is used to think a negative thought, there is a very instant, immediate karmic effect. Given that effect over a period of time, an illness is created in the body, and depression is created in the emotional field. The next section is titled, "The world will mirror your thoughts and beliefs." This is more true than most of us will ever know. The world will mirror to us our thoughts and beliefs. And so the text reads, secondly, in karma, the second way we feel karma, is that there is a mediated form of karmic response, namely that the world around you will, over a period of time, coagulate, create itself in a context that will mirror to you that which seems to prove the negative thought that by now you have forgotten you created. Then you will have the negative thought again, and you will mistakenly believe that the negative thought is there because of the conditions outside of you. An example would be for someone to see an event occur in life, such as the government raising taxes, and then say, yes, I have always known that that's the way it is. You cannot trust a single politician. Yet, that one is not seeing that 15 years ago, he decided that politicians could not be trusted because he heard it from his father. And he, quote, knows, close quotes, in his mind, that the politicians will always do something to take more money out of his pocket. Then, 15 years later, when taxes are raised, the mind says, ha, I knew it. I think I must have been right all along. You see what they did? This means that politicians, it proves that politicians cannot be trusted. When, in fact, politicians, the politicians, are merely the manifestation that fulfills the prophecy. In this way, I want to invite you to look at your own life. How are the events that are occurring and the quality of life you are living possibly reflecting a self-fulfilling prophecy? In other words, how could it be merely the fulfillment of the karma of how you are using your mind? Usually, in this secondary form of the way karma shows up, the beliefs or thoughts are very, very old, deep in your unconscious. As you go back in time and look at your life, you might want to ask, quote, what must I have believed previously for this effect to be showing up, close quotes. For instance, if you have no money, look well at what you have believed about money in the past. Especially look to see what were the beliefs about money that my parents held. For indeed, as we have touched on before, each soul drops into this world through the context of the parents. There is a context of perception, belief, and attitude that you begin to be colored by because you are accepting that coloration into the field of your own energy. You're doing this as a means of making contact with this world and emerging into it. If, for instance, the parents believe that spirituality and material wealth cannot go together, and therefore to be spiritual means to do without materially, then look at how your life has evolved. Do you find a block at receiving money for being of service to others, but no block in receiving money for doing something you dislike? Live in that question, beloved friends, and begin to apply it to the whole of your life. As you look at your life, look at the effects you experience as your surroundings and your context. Are you alone with no lover or friends? If so, what have you believed about the world previously? For somewhere, it is the nature of your thought, the agreements you have made unconsciously or consciously about what things mean, the agreements you have made with the family and the culture in which you've been birthed, that has actually generated the energy that is showing up as the effects you experience as your life. What thoughts or beliefs were you holding within the mind? One common thought is, quote, oh, I just really can't make it on my own. I need to be taken care of. I don't have what it takes, close quotes. Then, 25 years later, you wonder why you feel resentment toward the mate. The resentment is merely the recognition that you thought a negative thought about yourself, you acted upon it, and you have created the effects of someone who is controlling and provides you with all of your money. You think there is a fault in them because you've forgotten to see the pebble that dropped into the pond of your omnipotent creativity, which is the domain of the mind. Karma, then, is an effect of how the mind is used. Now, I have indeed said that karma can only exist where unconditional loving does not. What does this mean? When the mind unconditionally loves, it loves first itself and places no conditions upon what it receives as ideas from the universe. There are many in your world that look up to those who take the greatest chances in life. For example, the actor or actress who waits on tables at some cheap hamburger stand, sleeps on a park bench, keeps taking acting classes, and finally gets the part that becomes rich and famous. Yet, that one who became rich and famous is one who received the impulse of a desire to act and followed up on it, and was willing to do whatever it took to be in the context in which something may or may not occur. They had the willingness to take the risk. Such a one is living actually in a state of unconditional love of the self. Whether they think about it or not, they are carrying the subtle belief that the universe will somehow arrange itself and will support them to follow their heart. The next section is titled, Karma Does Not Exist in Unconditional Love. And the text reads, in unconditional loving, karma does not exist. The example I have given you is just a rudimentary phase of unconditional loving. In its mature state, in its spiritual state, unconditional loving means that the mind has awakened and seen that nothing that occurs in life can cause it to contain or withdraw its love. In the perfection of unconditional love, the mind simply loves. You might say here to be in alignment with Dr. Rice's regulatory speech, the mind simply extends love. The mind becomes aware of its true nature and extends that energy. The text goes on. Karma, then, cannot be said to exist because that mind is no longer experiencing effects coming back at it. It has transcended the world of cause and effect, and regardless of what arises, it merely extends love. And who can be imprisoned who simply extends love? So there is a transcendence of karma through unconditional love. And unconditional love is always the fruit of the decision to extend love to oneself. Not because it is a duty to do so, not because it will make your husband love you more. You have love for yourself. You extend love to yourself because you finally recognize that you might as well. That is all. You extend love to the self, the capital S self, because that's your true nature, because your creator extended love to you enough to create the capital S self that you are. That you come from love, that you're made of love, that you are love, and everything else is false. The text goes on and says, there are truly no effects that are occurring as the result of a source of power outside of you. In other words, nothing is being done to you. Nothing. You are free in each and every moment through the power of love, capital L love, to free yourself of what looks like the effects of the world. In truth, you are never at the effect of anything but the illusions of thought and belief that you have learned to project onto the world. Many of you feel somewhat fearful of telling your friends and neighbors that you are reading the Way of Mastery that contains the guidance of Yeshua or Jesus. That very fear that you feel, that constriction, is karmic. Somewhere a long time ago, you decided that following your own pathway must stay concealed and is not worth very much, and that no one will agree, and that their opinions decide your worth. I would ask you this question. Could there be fear in sharing with your friends that you study lessons on achieving mastery from Jesus of Nazareth? Could there be fear of sharing this if there was no prior belief that the opinions of others have the power to decide whether you are good or bad, worthy or unworthy? If that was not in place, there could not be the fear. So somewhere, you believe that there is a world outside of you whose opinions matter, where then, in your life, you do limit expression of your joy and your fun simply by being alive because you're concerned about the approval of others. Where do we do that? In what aspects of our lives are we limiting our expression of joy and fun because we're concerned about the approval of others? Karma is a most interesting concept, and it shows up in many, many ways. So ask yourself, quote, where are the effects I experience in my life that are the result of karmically induced thought as opposed to thoughts of unconditional self-acceptance, close quotes. Beloved friends, the fact that you are experiencing yourself as a body-mind is, in many ways, karmic. That is, it is the result of the vast experience of the mind to dare to think a tiny mad idea and take it seriously that, quote, I could separate myself from the love of the Creator and create an experience that convinces me that I've succeeded at achieving that separation, close quotes. Yet, unconditional love transforms the experience of the body into something quite different. Unconditional love of self, capital S self, translates the life of the body-mind, the life of paying taxes, the life of keeping your car well-oiled. All of it is translated so that the world becomes not something that proves your unworthiness, your separation, but rather as a medium of communication in which magic, in a sense, is always at play. Miracle-mindedness is always at play. You go to take your car to fill up your gas tank. Because your heart is open, your mind is open. You are not in resistance to it. And your eyes are open. You look around you and you feel the energy of somebody at the pump on the other side of the island. Because your heart is open, you go up to them and say, I'm just here pumping my gas. I looked up and saw you. You've got a great smile. You've made my whole day. Thank you. And then a conversation is struck, and it is discovered that they are looking for someone in their corporation who happens to have your skills, and you are looking for a new job. The things of the world become translated into that which supports your ever-increasing joy, success, fun, pleasure, material improvement, and new friends. It supports all of it when you see through the eyes of love. You then literally look at the world around you and finally get it that it was never what you thought it was because you failed to separate yourself from your Creator. everything you see is there to support your happy experience. You are free to live in your highest joy. Free to ask for what you want and free to open the heart and love. And the universe will respond accordingly to the beliefs you hold about yourself, within yourself. It comes to my mind to say that this is right at the edge of where people lose the admonitions that come several times already in the last few lessons, that we do this simply to experience the energy of love flowing through us. We don't do it so that then we will get the car or the house or the mate. We do it because the experience of the energy flowing through us is its own reward. That the joy, that the bliss state, that the contentment, that the appreciation for life, the gratitude for the experience of life, that is its own payoff. And as soon as you slip away from that and you start focusing on what you might accumulate or have drawn to you, then when it doesn't come on the schedule that your mind says, you generate the frustration and the irritation or the fear, the doubt. So please try to remember numerous times in the past few lessons it has said, do this exercise. Fill your heart with the awareness of your true nature. Extend that to everyone and everything. Not because it's going to bring you wealth and riches and joy in a relationship, but because of the shift in your energy the moment you do it. Do it just for the sake of experiencing your true nature. The last section in this lesson is titled, Karma Can Be Transcended. The text reads, look at your life then with respect to your karma or the action that is occurring in response to a former action. One of the most powerful things you could ever do is to ask the question, quote, what must I have believed is true about the world to be living the life I am living now? Close quotes. This is not to say that karma is a bad thing or a wrong thing. It is not. It is merely effect, cause and effect. So then you can ask yourself, quote, where in the effects I am experiencing now can I bring a greater degree of unconditional loving acceptance? Where am I looking through the eyes of boredom instead of appreciation? Where can I bring a greater depth of unconditional love? Where can I let go of resistance? Where can I give up trying to direct my own life and allow the love of the Creator to direct my life? Close quotes. Karma can be transcended by translating it into something else. Karma can become the fulfillment of your purpose, your very way to extend and teach only love. For when you see that the effects called your life are the result of limited, fearful negative thoughts or beliefs, those which you have held about yourself and the world about you, when you see that, you can embrace the effects you have created and see them in a new light. You could choose to view them as, quote, I choose to allow these very conditions to be those conditions under which I now learn to choose only love. What can I appreciate about this moment? what can I give forgiveness unto? In other words, where can I dismantle a false perception I've created about this situation? Or where can I overcome fear of speaking out and share a truth with a friend? What have I been avoiding that I can now embrace? Close quotes. In that very means, any set of conditions created as the effect of fear-based thinking now becomes the very pathway that will lead you to transcend the negative thinking and enter a domain of the use of the mind that will create effects far more enjoyable, far more expansive than you have ever imagined. Do not then lament your life as it is, for it is absolutely perfect. Each set of conditions contains within it everything you need to translate your life into that which expresses your love of the Creator, of the creation itself. Never lament what you create. Never lament what you experience. Never judge yourself and say, oh, why did I do that? I should never have done this other thing. No. Appreciate what you have created. Find what can be appreciated within it. Wrap the arms of your love around it. Bring unconditional acceptance and love to it. And thereby, you will find a window, a doorway to the creation of a new use of the mind that must necessarily require the universe to rearrange itself to accommodate the new vibration. Appreciation and love and unlimitedness require the universe to show up in a different way. In other words, karma is not your prison. Bringing your attention to the effects you create is a pathway to great freedom. What you did in the past to create the effects that you no longer want was not a sin or a mistake. It was merely a free choice in order to create experience. Fine. You've been there, and you've done that. Now, bring love and appreciation to the very effects you may be judging. For example, why did I buy that stock? It was so silly. I didn't get enough information, and now the company's gone bankrupt, and I just lost $10,000. Close quotes. Well, choose this thought. Let me be in appreciation of this very effect. Yes. Well, this is fantastic. I created an experience for myself. I can do more of this. This is great. Oh, I just love myself so much, I can decide to do it differently. This is great. I just learned a valuable lesson. Next time I'll get more information. I'd like another opportunity for a great stock opportunity to make money. Yes. I'm going to be an expert at this. I can see it coming through my unconditional love. Yes and yes. Close quotes. In fact, every time you think you have failed, celebrate. Celebrate your so-called failure as though it were a success. For remember, it is up to you to decide what you will perceive. All events are just neutral. Therefore, you are free to celebrate what you call your failures. When you celebrate them, they are your successes. Any successful person knows that they never fail. They merely learn and become wiser. Become one who is no longer at the effect of karma. Be one who uses karma wisely by looking honestly at their life, learning what needs to be learned without judgment, but rather in celebration. Become one who translates their karma into the doorway to an ever-increasing awareness of the Creator's presence and perfect love spread across the face of the earth, permeating everything you see, translating the world into the very means that can uplift you, awaken you, care for you, and heal you. Beloved friends, again, we ask that you study well the theme of this lesson and that you spend time with the questions that have been given to you. For in the way of knowing, the mind that abides in a perfectly liberated state knows that the world of effects that the mind is experiencing contains within it the very secrets to an ever-increasing delight in the presence of the Creator's love. There is no such thing as failure. There is only ongoing success as life evolves from good to better to best, as the mind learns to be the presence of love. Freedom is love under all conditions. That's the title of this lesson, and it's repeated. It's the closing second to the last statement. Freedom is love under all conditions. And with that, peace be unto you always. Amen. And with that, freedom is love under all conditions, I think about Roger McGowan on death row in Texas, who's living out the truth of that observation. Freedom is love under all conditions. And he has learned that love is the fundamental law of the universe. It is the reply to every situation. It is our reason for existing. It is the essence of what we are. He says, love is easy. Hate is the difficult role to play. He says, everything that happens in life is an opportunity to learn. Life is a school of higher learning. He says, we can refuse to be victims and we can take total responsibility for our lives. Even happiness is a choice to be made, whatever the circumstances of one's life. He says, God or infinite love provides a field of infinite possibilities so each of us can create a life that is perfect for us. And he says, everyone creates their own reality, essentially through their way of looking at and interpreting events, people, and situations. Pierre Pradervan writes in that book, this can explain why some people find peace even on death row, while others, enjoying every possible social and material advantage, decide to commit suicide. What we see, what we hear, what we feel is entirely, quotes, created, close quotes. In other words, it is colored by our consciousness and has no other reality than the reality we choose to give it. In other words, consciousness is all. So, we have about 10 minutes left. We have time for comments, questions, answers, testimonials, soliloquies, poems. 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. How is it resting with you to talk about a way to transmute even what you would consider as your own karma. So I have memory of reading from a variety of different sources about people who have decided to choose for love, even in some of the most unpleasant and or abusive circumstances. And from Pierre Prader-Band's book, The Gentle Art of Blessing, he talks about a person that they called Wild Bill because he had long hair and a beard, and when they liberated him from the concentration camps in Germany at the end of the war, they assumed that he was a very recent arrival, because any prisoners that stayed in that camp were given barely enough food to stay alive and were worked. And so they were emaciated and they were disease-ridden. And yet here he was, tall and strong and vibrant, and seemed to not have had many negative effects from his stay in the camp. So they were debriefing the prisoners as they were liberating them, and they asked him about himself, and they were shocked to find out, I think he had been there 11 years. And they said, how could that be? And he said, well, I don't know what to tell you other than that's how long I've been here. And my story is that I was a lawyer in the ghetto in Poland, and the Nazis came in and they slaughtered people left and right, and they lined my family up against the wall and shot them right in front of me, and they held me out because I spoke all these different languages, and I begged them to kill me, and they wouldn't kill me because they thought I was too useful with all of this knowledge of language. So he said, I made a decision right there because I had experienced the effects of hatred in my practice. So many people came in hating others, wanting to sue others and being sued and hating the people who were suing them. And he said, in that moment, I made a decision to choose for love, that whether I live for another few minutes or another few days or a few weeks or a lot of years, I was not going to give in to hate. And the end result of that was that he not only got the benefit energetically and emotionally, but he got the benefit physically, which is right in line with what we're talking about here in Lesson 29, where it says from the very first heading, or the second heading in the book, unloving thoughts alter the chemical balance of your body. And this is right back to a fractal referral to in Lesson 3, where they talk about forgiveness, where it says, if you understood what happens every time you judge anyone or anything, if you understood what happens, you would see that the very cells in your body cease to function properly when you're in contraction, when you're in judgment, when you're in bitterness, when you're in negativity, when you're in anger and hurt and sadness and fear. Which is exactly what Bruce Lipton tells us from his studies, looking at human cells under a microscope. Well, there have been recorded examples of this. Wild Bill, living for 7 or 11 years, I forget how many, in a concentration camp, and living from love, refusing to go to hatred, living in joy and appreciation and extending love to others and being loving to the people that kept him prisoner and being loving to his fellow prisoners. his body felt the benefit. Choose love. It's better for you, mind, heart, soul, body, everything, because energetically, when we choose the loving energy, when we choose alignment, when we choose appreciation, when we choose gratitude, we vibrate at a different energy level, and our cells function better. And we get this information from a variety of different sources. We just got it one more time through the Way of Mastery Lesson 29. It's also in Lesson 3. So, 563-999-3581. We've got a minute or two. I appreciate all of you who have been here. Thank you for coming back again after the weekend and listening. I hope this is continuing to be useful. We will probably do some review. We may move on. You never know where it's going to go. It is, it's fascinating to me how many times this gets referenced in therapy sessions and people, some of whom are not tuned into the Way of Mastery on Mindshifters Radio or Mindshifters Radio itself, have begun to look into books like The Way of Mastery for the healing benefits, for the potential mind-body healing benefits. So, thank you all for being here. Thank you for listening. Please remember that we have support groups that happen on Tuesdays and Thursdays. This week, again, we'll have two of them. Next week, we'll only have one on Tuesday because Thursday is the Thanksgiving holiday. But all the information you might need to join us or pass that along to somebody else who might want to join us is at mindshiftersacademy.org website. And I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. And I'll just let you know that I had you on speakerphone while Aria and I were getting her settled for playing some stuff, and she heard you talking about being love, and she asked me if that was God that was talking. So I thought you might enjoy knowing that.
That's cute. Thank you. Have a lovely show.
Thank you. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. So welcome to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Monday, November the 14th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael a moment to get dialed in. I'll let him know that Dr. Tim went off just a little bit early, so he may be not dialing in quite yet. So, all right, so when he gets on. But I will invite you to go to the website, whyagain.org. And look around. There's a lot of things that, you know, some people have been on the site almost every day but don't really look around at it to see what all's on it. And just a couple of things that you may not have noticed. I mentioned this the other day that in the top right corner of the dark blue band, there are some little icons, and it's for our Why Again Facebook page, for the Vimeo, YouTube, and for iHeartRadio to do the podcast. There's also information about Michael and me and how to contact us. But then you've got the six big blocks on the front page before you do any scrolling, where you can download the book or read it online. There's where you can access the archives to the radio show, the wake-up sheets, underneath that one says other worksheets, and that's all the rest of the tools. There's the shop, which we haven't got totally changed. Susan and I were working on it, but her mother passed away, and she's been going through a little bit of healing crisis herself, so it may be a little bit longer before we finish that. And then there's the videos to stream. And then if you scroll further down, you'll find our events. You'll find information on the app and how to download it or whatever. You'll find quick prints, like with one click you can print the latest seven-step worksheet or the feeling wheel or the commitment. All kinds of things on the website. If you scroll further down, there's videos that you can watch. There's testimonials. There's the news. If you click on multimedia and go down to news, that's where you'll also find the newsletters. And so you can click on that and pick up any newsletters you've missed. If you're not on our mailing list, all the way at the bottom of the page, you can click to sign up to be on our mailing list, and we'd love to have you there. That way you get all of the newsletters. We don't send out too many. You know, I aim to get one a month, but I usually don't. So you might get six or seven newsletters in a year. And so it's not like we bombard your email when you sign up. And we appreciate you being part of this group here. And we're glad you're here today listening. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. You know, I maybe don't say it often enough, but I sure do appreciate everything that you get done in the realm of extending the work and making it available to people. And the app is awesome. The website is just, I mean, I can't fathom how many hours you've spent on that, how many thousands of hours, I mean literally thousands, to get in the shape that it's in, the conversions we've done to get it, you know, to make it more functional, two total rounds of a redo of 20,000 pages. It's just, it's a lot. So just deep, deep, deep appreciation.
Well, you are welcome
and
deserving.
And thank you, sweetheart. I appreciate you. Cherish you. And we have that little lady, Ari Rain, with us today, appreciating and cherishing her as well. And one of the things that's on my mind, I don't think we put this in a newsletter yet. Maybe that's something we can do next newsletter. We've been working the last several days. You know, winter is here. We've hit our first official freezing night in just the last couple of days, and we're down to, I think, 24 last night. So our gardens are complete, except, actually, they still look very lush and green because we planted a winter cover crop. There are a bunch of different plants that will, in the spring, fold back into the soil. And one of the things we've been doing is soil building. And I, you know, the last several days we've been out around the neighborhood with, you know, people cleaning up the yards and collecting leaves and grass to put in our compost bin. And I'm speaking about this because it's an integral part of the healing process. The article I'm talking about, there's an article I've been working on called Healing from the Ground Up. And realizing that you can't be healed and whole if you don't have food in your body. And you can't grow food on dirt, which our culture tries to do. It pretends that what comes out of the ground after they've slaughtered everything in the soil, after they've put glyphosate 10 gallons per acre to plant a field with something that will grow GMO with chemicals and all the crap that goes with it, you've got total, complete dead soil, dead, nothing alive in it whatsoever. And somebody tries to convince us you can get life out of that. What a bizarre thought. You can kill the soil totally and get life out of it. Reminds me of the atheist scientist and challenging God and say, you know, we got it all figured out now. We know how this whole thing works. And so, you know, we don't need you anymore. You can just go. God says, really? Oh, really? Tell me. Well, just a little context. How about you create some life and I'll create some life? I'm just like, okay. So God reaches for a handful of soil, and the scientist reaches for a handful of soil. And God says, whoa, 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 wait a minute, wait a minute. Get your own soil. Soil is a live thing. Actually, scientific experts, soil experts, are saying that we maybe have 60 years of soil left on the planet, actual soil, compared to dirt. Dirt is not alive. Dirt is dirt. Soil is filled with life, like the tiniest little, a teaspoon of soil has billions of organisms in them, billions of units of life. And it's those units of life that create that which nourishes this life that we have. So that's kind of been on my mind. And interestingly enough, a friend of ours, friend student of ours, who's been studying our work for many years, actually works with a land management trust. And she's been hired by one of the states to rewrite their laws regarding how soil is treated, because it's such an important thing. And the last several days, as I say, we've been working on creating another round of soil. We now have a compost bin, a three-unit compost bin that's about 6 feet deep, and I don't know, what do you think, honey? It's probably 15 or 16 feet wide, something like that. So we've got a good chunk of soil in development there, and then a third place, which is an old tree stump, and we've been, you know, harvesting soil out of that, putting nutrients in it. And last year we probably got about 30 plus gallons of really beautiful black actual live soil out of that old tree stump, and we've fed it again and filled it with all of the greens that we cut out of our garden when we prepared for winter, and we put sawdust in it and leaves and grass. And I was out last week with, you know, harvesting from the neighbors, probably about 10 huge contractor bags of mix of leaves and grass for the composting process. And then a couple of days ago, we went out and somebody had advertised they'd cut a tree down. And this guy had done just such a beautiful job with an old maple tree. So here's this maple, probably judging from the size of the logs that he cut from it, it was probably 75 or 100 years old. So here's this tree for 75 years plus, probably, that's been reaching down into the soil, bringing nutrients up, and building a structure based in actual live organisms in the soil. And he had cut them up in these perfect sizes that we can just put through our chipper. And there's how much nutrition is in a branch that's been fed by this tree drawing nutrients out of the earth for 75 or 100 years. And we did that last year, and we've probably created about 6 tons of soil in the last 3 years as we've been learning about gardening here, and we're working to expand that. But a friend, you know, this woman who's with this land trust called me this morning and said, by the way, I sent you a course on soil building, and, you know, with all the work you're doing and the conversations we've had, we've been cueing her into some stuff we've been learning as she's working on writing laws for the state on conserving soil, building soil. And so she forward us a course and said, hey, I'll pay for half of it. I realize you guys have not been on the road, so cash flow is a little slim, so I'll pay for half the course if you want to do it. And of course, we'll feed her back some information that comes from that. So just actually finished signing up. That's kind of between us, the work we've been doing in the garden. Then she coincidentally calls me this morning and says, hey, I'd like to pay for half of this course for you. And it's a professional land management person that's we've been, you know, harvesting information from YouTube University on soil building, and it's been pretty successful. And we started out with 3 years ago clay on top of grass, and now we've got probably in those two gardens, I don't know, probably 5 or 6 tons of soil that we built. It's just this black, loamy, beautiful, smells awesome soil. It's an ongoing project to just keep building that. So just bring that up to bring that to your attention, inspire you, hopefully, you know, if you don't have a garden, if you're not eating food, if you're going to the grocery store. And I used to say, because I used to think before I started working in the garden like this, I used to think that, you know, well, at least you can get food if you go to that part of the grocery store that's got green and orange and yellow and red things in, as opposed to packages. But I'm realizing more and more that unless those things that look like peppers and look like tomatoes and look like oranges and look like apples and look like pears and bananas, unless they're grown on soil, they're really not food. We've been tricked. And if you want to have an energy system, a human energy system that really functions and works and is healthy mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, sexually, if you want that kind of health, you got to start in the ground. And, you know, one of the ways we started, we just bought a couple of small, you know, $75 a piece on Amazon, hydroponic systems and started, you know, developing some lettuces. And we have, there's a company that sells seed mats for sprouts. So Ari just, I mean, when we open a package or take the lid off of these growing sprouts, she just chows them down. She knows what real food is. At four, she just loves to take those sprouts and chew on them. So she knows what food is. She knows what the energy is. And so just, you know, inviting you to consider your involvement. Maybe you're in a community that needs a community garden, you know, food desert, you know, there are so many food deserts in America where people, and when you get down to it, it's really a destructive thing that's been done to communities by governments, by corporations. You know, this community isn't rich enough, doesn't have the money. Well, why would we put a grocery store and sell food there? We'll put a convenience store and we'll sell, you know, what we call soft drinks with sugar and caffeine and phosphoric acid in them and several different chemicals. We'll sell candy bars and we'll sell chemical marshmallows and, you know, we'll sell the sweepings off of the slaughterhouse floor in the form of hot dogs and things like that. And in many communities, that's the only access to food they've really got. You know, people who, you know, probably like you and I, we want to go to the grocery store, we get in our car and we go. But there are millions of people in this country that don't have the ability to get in the car and go. There are millions of people, if they could get in the car and go to the grocery store, wouldn't have the money to buy actual food. I mean, there are deserts that people just, they just don't have the resources. They don't have the kind of mobility or the kind of money it takes to eat actual food. And when you, you know, if you've ever spoken to somebody who trains animals, like say a dog trainer, first thing a good dog trainer will do is ask you what's the diet your dog's eating. If your dog's not eating a decent diet, their trainers won't even talk to you about training your dog because they know that dog will never fall in line and will never have good behavior. And we call certain types of people in certain communities in this country, you know, bad and, you know, criminal and all that stuff. But the country's, the culture has set up failure for certain people. And, you know, people say, well, yeah, but anybody can pull themselves up by the bootstraps. Well, you know, that's true if you got bootstraps. But there are millions of people in this country that don't have any bootstraps. And food is one of the starting points. So just invite you to consider that. If you, there's an interesting video. It's a freebie. You can just do a search on Google for We Must Grow. And it talks about soil. It talks about soil building. That was one of the things that inspired us to do what we're doing. And, of course, you know, forever at Heartland, for decades, when people come, we do a total fresh and raw dietary regimen, as much organic food. You know, we used to grow food at Heartland, not enough to handle a whole summer, but we used to have a fair bit of our own food that we grew. And, you know, I feel blessed. I've sort of come full circle because now in the last 4 years, I'm getting my hands in the earth. We grew it at Heartland, but I didn't have my hands in the earth. I was on the other end of things. But here, you know, we're getting to participate in that part of it. And so it's kind of like full circle for me. And I'm finding it really serves, and it's really vitality giving, you know, just putting your hands in the soil, breathing, literally breathe. There's a man that we used to at Heartland. We used to buy a carbon product from to put in the soil. And his take was that actually most of the nutrients that go into the plant don't actually come from the soil. Actually, they come from the gases given off by the soil organisms, and they're absorbed by the leaves. And his carbon product was designed to liberate nutrients from the grains of soil so that these organisms had an easier time turning them into what he called blessed gases. And so just getting down and hands and face in soil is it's really quite a privilege and quite an experience if you haven't done it. And so just inviting you, and we'll probably do our next newsletter and put this, you know, Healing from the Ground Up article in the last newsletter. We had a course on holistic healing. And by the way, if you're working with that, as you work through it, I'd love to hear your thoughts, your reports, whether you drop me a text or an email or you know, get on the show and, you know, go through and, you know, you did the first link, the second link, the fourth link, the tenth link. How's that speaking to you? What's it doing for you? And I'd love feedback to adjust that course. It's one that I'm looking at making globally available. I actually just set it up so that I could do it in sections. And this young man we're dealing with that we've been supporting for a couple of years now in Kathmandu, Nepal. And I just actually cut the course into several pieces so I could send it to him through Facebook Messenger, because you can only put so much material in it. But if you're on our newsletter or mailing list and you've been listening to that course, I would love to have your feedback on it. If there are things that really make sense to you that, wow, you could emphasize this more, or, gee, I didn't quite understand that, or how about this piece of it? We would love your questions and your thoughts on it. And, you know, this is the first time I've put it out in that form. It's something I've been developing now for several years, but put it out in this particular form. So we'd love to have your feedback, input, anything else you'd like to see in it, or any pieces of it that weren't clear, didn't make sense if you're listening to the course on holistic self-healing. And of course, as you work with it and through it, we'd love to hear your thoughts here on the show live, and that will help me to adjust the course so that it becomes more functional. And, you know, my take as a naturopathic physician is that every person needs to be their own primary healthcare provider. When I talk about primary, you know, you go to your primary healthcare provider. Your primary healthcare provider knows about your whole being, your whole overall health and well-being. And if you have challenges, you know, knows where to direct you to get the kind of support you need for this, that, or the next challenge. Every person, my take is, you need to be your own healthcare provider. So one of the objectives of that course is to support you in being your own healthcare provider, so you know where you need to go for support, where you need to go for help, where there are challenges, and how to understand the challenges that you're facing and what to do about them. If you don't have that knowledge, then you're at the mercy of your healthcare providers. And sadly, if you look at the statistics, 30% of deaths in America every year are caused by the healthcare system. People who, if they were not engaged in the healthcare system, would still be with us today. Hundreds of thousands of people a year. And you say to yourself, well, how could anybody get it? That can't be true. How could you get away with that? Well, it's called standard of care. If the mass of people who control the healthcare system say, this is the standard of care. Well, yeah, it kills a third of the people we deal with, but that's the way it is. And if a doctor prescribes that and someone dies, all they have to do is say, when somebody comes back and wants to say, well, that's standard of care. Yeah, that standard of care kills a third of the people we deal with, but that's just the way it is. If you are your own healthcare provider, you're not at the mercy of that. There are some awesome physicians out there, some awesome people doing awesome work that are, you know, 100% caring. And sadly, there's some who, if you look at actual medical training, I've worked with, you know, directors of medical schools, presidents of medical schools. And if you look at the process that physicians are put through in medical school, it is classic brainwashing. And brainwashing means, like the horse, we put a set of blinders on you and you see this. Now, we're designed as human beings to have 360-degree vision. Education, or pardon me, what's called education, indoctrination. Education comes from the word educare, means to draw out, doesn't mean to put in. Indoctrination means to put in. And what indoctrination often does is it removes the 360-degree vision that we're capable of and narrows us down to maybe 20 or 30 degrees. So this is the only answer. This is the only solution. And people can't think outside that box. So-called education is the reason why somebody came up with this idea of thinking outside the box. Healing from the ground up is outside the box thinking. You know, years ago, I had a stepson that had cancer. And young man, he was about 13. He had a lot of conflicts with his father, and he had cancer. And it was the kind of cancer that they said he had a very slim chance of living through it. And it's the kind of cancer that a lot of young men who have challenges with their fathers end up getting. We worked with this young man. We changed his dietary regimen. Actually, his friend's parents became very upset with us, because his friends started to follow the dietary regimen that we had him on. And we had shared custody, and he would spend time at his father's house. And he, over a very short period of time, though his taste liked the crap he was being fed, liked the phosphoric acid, sugar, chemicals, caffeine sodas that he was getting at his father's house, and liked the dead animal flesh that he was getting at his father's house. He'd been raised on it and such. And when he came to our house, he was on a pure vegetarian diet, had supplements, and we worked with him, especially through the toughest times of his treatments, every day with A Course in Miracles. He got to the point where his father became very agitated because he wouldn't eat the crap anymore. He wanted actual food because he noticed how much better he felt. When we spoke to the surgeon at Shands Hospital, the primo kids facility in the world, actually, he went in, his father actually sued him to force him to do surgery because he recognized that the treatment regimen they had him on was killing him. Forced him to do surgery. And when his mother took him to the hospital to sign him in for that surgery, he was put in a room with a young kid who had a similar cancer and had just completed his surgery, literally, I don't remember exactly, a day before. And when we took him in there, the surgeon and the mother and father were celebrating that this young man who just had surgery for a cancer that would likely take his life, they were celebrating that this young man had eaten half a hot dog and drank a Coke. That was the celebration. And when this young man came through the surgery with flying colors and the the surgeon, when he took the bandages off the first time afterward, was just aghast at how I've never seen healing this fast before. And we suggested what we were doing with his nutrition. He became very enraged, like enraged. He actually, his stepson was probably down to about 80 pounds, was really frail and pale. And this guy was grossly overweight. Well, maybe not grossly, but significantly overweight. And when my stepson spoke to him about what he was doing with nutrition and that was important to him, this physician just raged at him like a maniac. What you eat doesn't have anything to do with your healing. It's my surgery that's going to heal you. Crazy time. So there are many factors that a primary healthcare physician is going to know about, and you need to be one for you, is my offering. That's what this course in self-healing, that's what this course on healing from the ground up is about. And they're free. I'm not looking for money for them. Yeah, if you want to support us with a donation, great, but they're free. Take them, use them, pass them on, spread them around the world. Give them to anybody and everybody you can. Because the understanding of the process of healing is more important to our world right now than anything to do with money or ownership or anything else. It's just time for us to wake up and to realize that living a life as love, as a human being, and understanding the dynamics that go into keeping this energy system in balance and functional is extremely important. As is breathing. There's so many things that come into this thing called health. So far beyond, oh, have I got a pill for you. In any event, that's kind of what's on my mind for today. And if we can support you, that's what we're here to do. This conversation is about building the brain cells for living differently than the culture would have us live. Opening the space for true, holistic, holiness. And holiness isn't about being down on your knees with your hands folded. It's about living as a whole human being. And in order to express that wholeness, it has to express on every level, right down to the soil that your food is grown on. So grow some, build some soil. There's a wonderful resource called YouTube University, and you can learn just about anything you want to learn. And that's what we've done with soil, and we actually, I just finished signing up for this soil building course from this group that's has a global soil project, and that actually starts in a couple weeks, and so we'll be sharing insights with you as that unfolds, as that moves along. And beyond that, of course, the next level or the next piece of the puzzle, the core piece that's our specialty, those other things are things we're doing to be holy, but our specialty, our addition to the puzzle is that of what goes on with perception, energetic constructs in the mind-body unit that produce results to where we say, ouch, there's pain, there's hurt, and recognizing that that's the level at which you want to deal with your diseases. You don't want to deal with them when they are fully manifest in the physical. There's a lot tougher place to go there. You want to deal with them when they're back there at the level of irritation, hostility, fear, sadness, grief, rage, perhaps. You want to deal with those energetic disease patterns at that level where they can be removed. And note the core of this teaching is first century Aramaic forgiveness, and the word forgive doesn't have anything to do with, I'm going to let you off the hook for what's going on inside of me. The word forgive has to do with, I'm going to remove, I'm going to go inside myself, find that which I've been hiding from myself and my generations have been hiding from ourselves perhaps for 1,000 years. Find that, develop the skill and the ability to reach in and remove that energetic pattern. So forgiveness is removal. Nothing to do with letting anybody off the hook. And as we remove those patterns, stepping back into the truth of who we are as human beings. So that's what we're here to talk about. And Ms. Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anybody with a comment or question in the chat room or anything from the email?
Emails. I actually have a comment, and I'll read it, and then we have a question from another person. So
cool.
It's hold on. Okay, they're in there, baby. It says, aloha to the community. My circle is excited, and we saw the information here. He's talking about the website. I've been poking around for this information for weeks, and I will be sure to tell my membership base to swing on by. The other morning, I was skipping through the search engines trying to uncover an answer to my, quote, revolving questions, unquote. Now I'm planning to take things higher in whatever mode I can. We're getting all spaced out on the smart ideas that we are observing. Moreover, I just desire to thank you in words for the solid answers. This has opened me out of rough territory. Many exciting knowings are growing in my world. It's really a grand area to make new relationships too. And then we have a question. A person has written, and let me flip over to that one. And it's, Solly says, hi, Michael and Jeannie. I've been trying to do worksheets around the theme of me getting angry and abusive with my children when they annoy each other and often physically fight. They're 3 adolescent boys. My reaction to their behavior is to yell at them and sometimes grab them. My father used to yell at me and sometimes beat me and my brother. I really try to avoid this with my children. This leads me to resent myself. They need authority, but I want it to be loving and safe. My wife loses control of her emotions when I do this, and then she loses respect over me, which usually leads to the children doing the same, and finally myself. She speaks very low of me, and I recognize wanting to avoid her and not open to her at all. I feel monitored and chastised. I know this is an issue best approached by calling to the show. So I'm writing this on my day off work, and I am in a very different time zone. I'm having trouble getting to the being love, quote unquote. I stared at an infant at a coffee shop, and I tried to tap into the essence of the little one, and I kind of get what you talk about. So if you would say some words for me, kind of going through a worksheet on this, especially in inviting the energy of Rachma, letting go of my trauma with my father, being safe and loving to my children, letting go of resentment toward my wife and maybe to myself, and to get to feel and face the root of the problem and then feel Rukka. I like the idea of how you present the being. If needed, I'll give additional information, but it would mean a great deal to me if you'd address this. My name is Solly, and you can use it in the show. Thanks.
Well, hey, Solly, it's a delight to hear from you. And I admire the depth of your questioning. I can hear that you've been really mulling over in your mind the work that you need to do in regard to healing these family dynamics. And my offering is, what I hear is your problem, and I just had this sweet little face come in to give me a kiss. Are you going to give me a kiss? Okay. So I admire the depth at which you're questioning and at least moving your mind in the direction of full responsibility. The bottom line answer to your question I would offer is that what I hear is you're dealing with stress. And the core resolution that's going to happen for you is when you realize what the root of your stress is and begin piece by piece to remove those stresses. In this work, one of the things that we recognize is that the key to understanding stress is that stress is created by goals. So stress is created by goals. What I hear you saying is you have goals for yourself around your children, big time goals, many of them. You have goals for your children individually and collectively, for your children with each other. You have goals for yourself in regard to your wife. You have goals for yourself in regard to yourself. You have goals for your wife in regard to you. Now, that adds up to overload. That adds up to overwhelm, is my offering. You know, 2,000 years ago in the Aramaic language, you hear this man Yeshua say, sufficient for the day are the evils thereof. And you, if you listen to that from the Greek translation, you say, what the heck's that got to do with anything? But actually, he's giving a key there when you understand what he's talking about in Aramaic. His instruction is, in essence, what you can distill that statement down, sufficient for the day are the evils thereof, is that goals drive stress. Goals, pardon me, create stress and drive perception. When we load a goal, let's say a goal that you have for your children, and you might say, well, I want my children to stop fighting. That's my goal for them. But actually, if you hold a goal for your children to stop fighting, then what you're doing is you're strengthening their willingness to fight. You're strengthening just by the thought of stop fighting. When you're holding goals for them to stop fighting, the vibration, the energy, the part of your mind that goes into resonance is that of fighting. And when that's resonating in you and your children from the same genetics you do, then you just, by saying, now you boys stop fighting, you just instructed them to continue fighting because that's what resonates in their minds. Now, when you start looking, let's say, in that one regard at, well, what you want your children to do is learn to be peaceful and gentle with each other. Chances are, if you, as you described, came from a family system where your father was abusive with you, then you have very likely trained your children to some degree in abuse. Because when stress builds, you know, there's a thing we talk about, and I don't know if you've heard us refer to this previously, but this thing we talk about, the power person dynamic. And a power person dynamic is installed in a mind when three things happen simultaneously. And it's a dynamic that's usually installed in a child by a parent, unknowingly, unwittingly, not something any parent would ever purposely do, but just by living with unresolved traumas inside of ourselves, they get passed on from generation to generation. The energetic patterns are passed on from our genes to the child. And then when they react to the things we've passed on that we haven't resolved, then that arouses more of those goals in us and more of that stress in us related to our power person. So to understand the power person dynamic, there are three things that happen to install a power person dynamic in a child's mind. And again, it's usually a parent with a child, though not always. But the parent has more power over the child's life than the child does, number one. Number two, the parent is not functioning as love. It's not functioning as a human being. And then number three, the child perceives the circumstance as survival. It's like, oh, my God, here's my father with his fist up in the air to hit me. If I don't please him, he'll kill me or I'll die. It's survival. When those three things occur, the child's energy field opens wide, and it's like they turn into a sponge, and they literally absorb energy from the environment that they're in. So if dad's in rage and raising his fist, the child in that circumstance, energetically, their energy field is opened, and they absorb that rage. And if you've absorbed rage, you know, when you spoke about your father hitting you, if you've absorbed rage time after time after time after time, and that's in your file on being the child in relationship to father, when the stress is up and the chips are down with your children, one of the primary things that's going to take over is rage. Until you have resolved, until you've addressed and removed that rage. And again, I acknowledge the language with which you're speaking about this and your desire and willingness to move in the direction of healing. But it takes a significant amount of work to clean up a childhood like that, and a childhood dynamic that's probably been passed from generation to generation to generation in your family and your bloodline for who knows how long. You're the early adopter. You're probably the first one in your family system that stepped into and said, wait a minute, I need to do this differently. Now, once one has an abusive father or mother and has opened their field like a sponge and absorbed the energetic dynamics of that, then for the rest of their lives, especially when they're under great stress, their behaviors are going to be controlled by what they learned in relationship to their power person. So for someone who's had that power person dynamic installed by their parent, unknowingly usually, you know, no parent would ever do this to a child willingly. I don't believe there's any parent that would ever do that. But unconsciously, it's what plays out. And we all do it. You know, I think about raising my own children, and I had some idea of these tools and this work. You know, way back then, it was the early days. My kids are in their 40s now. So in the early days, I wish I knew what I knew know today, because my relationship and my life with them would have been different, and their lives would be different today as would mine. But once this dynamic has been installed by a parent, then for the rest of one's life, until that power person dynamic is cleaned up, behaviors related to the power person are what's going to control that child's life. And it doesn't matter whether that child is 4 or 14 or 40 or 80, if they haven't gone into their own minds and cleaned up the power person dynamic, then when the stress is up and the chips are down, that power person dynamic is going to come into activity and control their behavior. So the behaviors that the child will do are related to the level of stress that they're under. So, and just I'll invite everybody who's listening, and yourself in particular, Saul, to just take a look at your life and notice that when there's no stress, you'll do whatever you did to get along with your power person. And then when stress starts to build, you'll do whatever you did to resist and survive with your power person. And then when you become ultra stressed, you'll do what your power person did to you that you hated the most. And that's the point at which you'll start to lash out verbally or physically to your children. Even though you've said, well, I'm never going to do what my father did, there's not a choice over that. Now some people have enough strength to resist doing that, but that's even that is tough. And so those things will tend to play out. Now, the thing that creates this ultra-stress condition is how many goals you have. And I outline, you know, the goals that you have there. There are a huge number of goals in that relationship with your wife, with your children, with yourself, and yourself toward yourself and each of them. That just living in that circumstance means your stress level probably runs right up near the top. And it's automatic. There's a thing in the mind called the automatic decision system. And the automatic decision system, basically, when something comes along that resonates, anything that's in the mind, the automatic decision system through resonance kicks that into activity, and it takes over your mind. And it takes over, and it takes over, and it takes over, and it takes over. And it's like, you know, let's say, you know, the television's on, and somebody turns the volume up all the way, and the television's just blaring, screaming out. And you say, well, turn it down. So somebody turns it down a notch. Well, it's turned down a notch, but it's still blaring. Turn it down again. Oh, it's still blaring. Turn it down, turn it down, turn it. Each time the volume gets a little lower, but it's still blaring out. If you start out with a power person dynamic with an abusive parent, then when something resonates those brain cells in you, your mind is going to blare out that message. And you can say to yourself, oh, turn it down. I don't want to have it. I don't want to be in this condition. I don't want to feel this way. But the automatic decision system just takes whatever energy patterns are there and they play out. They just automatically kick in. You can't just say one day, oh, okay, well, I'm never going to do that again. So let's say an abusive parent dynamic in the child's life will in some way, shape, or form turn into an abusive power person dynamic with that child when they grow up with their own children. And each time you kick in and do the forgiveness process, what you're doing is you're weakening that dynamic a little bit more, a little bit more. It would be nice if we just had a giant eraser and you could say, oh, okay, there's a behavior I'm never going to do again, and go and wipe the whole thing out of your physiology, out of your mind, out of your emotions, out of your memory. That just can't be done. At least I haven't found a way to do that. But there is a consistent, persistent way to do it if you apply forgiveness. And, you know, if you go back to the forgiveness dynamic 2,000 years ago, the original man who taught it on the earth was this man, Yeshua. And they said to him, you know, well, how many times do I need to forgive my brother? Is 7 times enough? Now, to translate that into your question, Saul could be saying, Michael, how many times do I need to forgive this to my children? Is 7 times enough in order to erase this abuse dynamic? How many times do I need to forgive this to my wife? Is 7 times enough in order to erase all these dynamics of the way she talks about me, the way she thinks about me, the way I feel around her? Michael, how many times do I need to forgive this to myself with the way I feel about myself and the thoughts and the emotions I have? Is 7 times enough? And Yeshua would say, no, he would say 77 times 70 times. The Greeks tell us he said 77 times, or 7 times 77. But actually in Aramaic it was 77 times 70, an infinite number of times till you're complete. So compare it to turning down the volume on the television set. I turn it down one notch, but if the television is blaring through the roof, it's still blaring. Yeah, it's a notch quieter, but I can hardly notice that it's quieter, and another notch and another, another. But, and you know, if there was a mass way to just go in and pull all that stuff out, I'd say, here it is, do it. I don't know of one, except by stepping in and doing your work. And as you step in and do your work, the process becomes very intense, especially if there's abuse in your history. You know, there's a passage in the book of Job, and basically Job is a book about healing. Job is the story of a man who's committed to his healing process and what he has to go through in order to heal his family genetics, his family dynamics. And you can tell how intense the process is by the request that he makes for reprieve. If you read that book, you're reading all about a man's healing process. And there's a point where Job says, you know, is talking to the Creator and asking for, just give me an intermission. Like, and I could imagine Salty saying, gee, you know, how about if I just had 2 days of rest from this conflict with my kids, with my wife, with myself? Could I just take 2 days off? And from what you described, probably 2 days with just peace and the presence of love in your home would be wonderful. But I can only assume your wife has got some significant work to do. Your children have already got some significant work to do, as do you. So you're not probably going to get that. But here's what Job, and that's the situation Job was in. And Job says, God, please just give me time to swallow my saliva. He just wants an intermission long enough to swallow his own spit. And that is how intense the process can become when you choose to step into doing real healing work. Now, real healing work has been hidden because it's not fun, it's not easy, it's not Dr. Feelgood. Most people would rather have some Superman or Superwoman that comes in and fixes their lives for them, and they can go, ah, see, now the master has taken care of it for me. But that does not exist. I know there are theologies that try to pretend it exists and want to make it exist. It doesn't exist. In fact, if you go back to the master healer, that a lot of people want to make it his job to fix their lives. He instructed a group of disciples on what to do. And when he did, half of the disciples said too hard a saying, and they left. They didn't want any more to do with him because he was inviting them into a work that is not easy and that is not Dr. Feelgood. So, you know, if you started back on day one of this radio show 11 years ago, our archives are there. We've got thousands of hours. You would get hours and hours and hours, thousands of hours of instructions in answer to your questions and how to handle them. All of that is in the last 11 years of archives. So I suggest that you start making time to listen. You dig into the worksheet and you start doing the worksheet. And sometimes the worksheet is going to intensify your process so much you wonder if, you know, if it's all going to come apart. But it's not. You are entering into the process. You are entering into the work. It's a narrow gate. And we're here to support you and to guide you in it. And all of that work is in the archives. If you go to our YouTube channel, there are dozens and dozens of videos. You're welcome to, you know, take those videos and put them to work, and each of them will give you a different piece of the puzzle. The Course on Healing, actually one of the earliest links that I have in the Course on Healing that I was talking about. And, you know, you're welcome, if you're not on our mailing list and you didn't get the email, you're welcome to drop Jeannie a note and we'll send you a copy of it. But one of the early links of all the links in this Course on Healing is a Father's Day service that I did for a group up in Michigan, actually. And the importance of how we live in relationship to parents. And a lot of children, especially, have been abused by their parents, want to abuse their parents, want to reach back and do the same thing. And even if they don't want to, when they're around their parents, there's so much unresolved trauma that they still come out with that kind of abuse. And so one of the starting points in the course is how to clean up your relationship with your family of origin, with your father and your mother. Until that's cleaned up, being a parent, there are going to be distortions in your ability to part of the process. So there's a video, and it's in the course that I talked about on healing. It's also, it's there, Father's Day service, on our YouTube channel. So you're welcome to access the archives and the radio show. You know, there's 20,000 pages on the website, and a lot of them, of course, I can't say ABC, it's just there. You start searching through it, and there are tools, there are worksheets, there are processes, you know, everything we can possibly offer in the way of support. One of the things that I think you would find most helpful at this point, because it's succinct and on track, what I'm hearing you say, Saul, is that you've got power person dynamics to work through. Power person dynamics with your children, power person dynamics with yourself, power person dynamics with your wife. And those dynamics are addressed in our course, Codependence to Interdependence Communication Practicum. And the course that we have available is a self-study, self-paced, self-study course. There are 90 hours of video in that course. When you register for it, it includes two personal code evaluations. And basically what the personal code evaluation does is it breaks the behaviors and the activities of your mind down into 10 areas and shows you where the most important ones are for you to work on and gives you specific assignments to do for your personal mind in order to improve its function in regard to living your life. So when you start the course, you get a personal code evaluation, send you videos on how to understand it, and specific. Here, you know, out of 10 areas, here are your three challenges, the three things you most need to work on. And then we'll give you specific. We'll give you a mind shifter. We'll give you word links. We'll give you things to study in regard to a study, which will lead you into doing the work around each of those areas. So that's the starting point. And then the course includes why is this happening to me again, healing through relationships, communication, did you hear what I think I said, and codependence to interdependence. That self-study is a 90-hour video course, 90 hours. We actually did two live Zoom courses, so all of the question and answer, all of the teaching is there and reinforced for, you know, basically the 90 hours is like an enlargement of what I've said in the last half hour. It goes into each step of the process, tools and worksheets for cleaning those parts of your mind up. So that might be something you might want to step into. So there are several ways. There are lots of free ways you can access the material. And, of course, we're here every day to answer questions, and we're happy to spend as much time in your questions as you need support with and do that freely. And, you know, all of the archive work and such. And the course, the Codependence to Interdependence course, if you choose to engage in it yourself, is $600. And it also includes a post-evaluation, a personal code evaluation. So when you finish the course, you get a second personal code evaluation that says, okay, here's where your gains have been, here's where your challenges are, and here's your first three, so that when you finish the course, you step up and do the next level of the work. So that would be, without any more specifics, that would be the starting point of where you want to go with taking on a big job. And as far as the worksheet goes, the thing that drives perception in the human mind is our goals. That's why the core of the worksheet relates to goals and therefore to stress. Now, there's some Harvard research that we talk about that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells are firing, the maximum amount of data that gets into conscious awareness is 9 bits. The thing that selects the 9 bits, if there's trauma in the 9 bits that are active in your perception at any given moment, the things that select which data from the unconscious is going to be used, and if there's trauma in it, is your goals. So if your perception around your kids, you know, I have a goal for them to be gentle with each other and they're raging at each other, what I need to do in order to drop into the part of my mind that's being resonated by that, the pain, the trauma, the turmoil that my mind is moving, is I cancel my goal for my children to be gentle with each other. And that collapses the perception, the surface mind perception around them, and I get to drop into my own unconscious dynamics by doing that. And as I clean my own unconscious dynamics up, then I begin to see, you know, it's like Paul talked about, we see it as though through a glass darkly. The darkness he's talking about is the unresolved family dynamics from the past. And each time I forgive, it's like I clean that mirror up a little bit. I clean that glass up a little bit, and I get to see more clearly, oh, here's what's going on. Gee, that's just like my father used to say. And here Johnny is doing it to Mary. Exactly what I used to watch my father do to my mother. Boom. And now that I'm clear in my unconscious, I can create a space to talk to my children, to Johnny and Mary, about cleaning that up, changing the whole family game. Alfred, that's the work you've taken on. It's a huge task, and we are here to support you 100% and appreciate your questions. Everybody, we're at the end of the show, so it was a fast hour. Take care. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world, and blessings. Bye-bye.